This is a great day. You know, we serve an invisible God. And here we sit singing to an invisible God in many respects. And yet he's left his footprints all over the universe. I mean, nowhere can you look but what you see his footprints. Whether it's the planets in a far-flung universe or whether it's a little baby. I was made to be aware of this when I got up this morning and saw the sunrise. And it was gorgeous. It was, of course, completely clear. And I thought, that's been doing that for a good while. Every morning it comes up. And it was so beautiful this morning. And I went inside the McDonald's to get a cup of coffee and a pie. And as I was sitting there eating that and thanking the Lord for the morning, I looked up and saw this photograph or a painting on the wall of four tiger cubs, I guess it was. And there they sat. I don't know how old they were, but they were precious. And I thought, you know, there's another example of the wisdom of God and the power of God and the intelligence of God. How in the world could he make something that could reproduce, something that was alive? And there they sat. And then I looked over on another wall, and there were nine, it looked to me like Labrador pups. In the back end of a car, the trunk lid open, and there they sat with all their paws. And I thought, well, there's another one of the species, and he made those too. And while I was looking, a bird flew across the window. And I thought, my goodness, there he is showing off again, to use Jane Gibson's expression. And I thought, how marvelous. Man, we serve such a great God. And it made me think of this poem that a cousin of mine gave me some years ago. I want to read it to you before we start our little study. It's entitled, Everywhere I Look. Everywhere I look, I find some wondrous handiwork of thine. Every single day I see some lovely thing you've given me. My heart almost overflows at the sight of velvet rose, lacy fern, and birds that sing. Lord, you give me everything. As the early morning breeze stirs softly through leafy trees, comes the dawn all steeped in gold, more than my two arms can hold. Silver stars throughout the night, purple showers, pale moonlight, turn my thoughts again to thee. Lord, I fear you're spoiling me. Everywhere I look, I find beauty of the richest kind. Little joys throughout the day almost take my breath away. How very precious I must be that you should have such love for me. And in each cranny, smallest nook, I find you everywhere I look. Be thankful that we live in a world created by this benevolent God. Hey, it didn't just happen. There are 2 million and counting different species, all alive, all able to reproduce, all able to reproduce after their kind and only after their kind. Not all the way from a bird sitting on a wire, balancing himself on that wire and sleeping. While he's asleep, he's still balancing. I thought, good grief, there's all this mechanism up there that... Just be thankful. My, my. Well, what have you got to be thankful for? I'm so full, I'm just about to bumble over. We're going to look at blessed are the meek this morning. Blessed are the meek. And he's a stranger to much of the world. Or it is a stranger, or she is a stranger. Who is this meek person that we're talking about? Do you know him or do you know her? What do they look like? It certainly isn't the weak. Most people think of meekness as weakness. It couldn't be further from the truth. Meekness is not weakness. Meekness is double strength. It's double strength. And we're going to look at it today. And I want to do four things for us to help us to get a handle on who this meek person is, or who what this meekness quality is. First of all, I want to translate the word meekness for us. And you know what that incurs. We'll do it in just a minute. I want to define it, I want to illustrate it with sort of a jigsaw puzzle that will let us see one aspect at a time until we finally see the meekness in flesh. And then I want to document it. And I think this documentation is going to knock your socks off. It did me this week. It literally knocked me flat on my back, flat to my knees, as I realized how this was a confirmation of my faith that just is so powerful. First of all, let's translate this into relationship language. Now, this is something we've been doing. For those of you that are visiting, we're studying the series on the Beatitudes. We've got folks here from 24 miles away. I forget now who it is, but you've been here before, though, haven't you? Yeah. So, but there are those that may not have been here. We're studying the Beatitudes. And each time we translate a Beatitude into relationship language. All right, such as, blessed are the poor in spirit translates how? I was wrong. Say it again. Now, everybody, that's good. Then the second Beatitude, blessed are those who mourn, translates,
I'm sorry.
The one for today, blessed are the meek, translates, let's do what's best for you. Would you say that with me? Let's do what's best for you. Man, when you get through with these Beatitudes, why Jesus said, whoever builds his house on what I've taught him, is like a wise man that builds his house on a rock. And you'll understand why. You're beginning to see why he was so on target with what he taught. So what we're going to do is do these things. We'll translate them as we have. We're going to define and illustrate them, and then we're going to document them. Let's define and illustrate these two. Meekness is, for one thing, it's power under control. That's one of the pieces of this puzzle. It's power under control. I don't know whether any of you are old enough to remember. You probably are. O.L., do you remember the movie that came out called The Gladiator? And who did you say was the... Victor Mature. I think that's it. I remember he was the slave that was in charge and was owned by a couple of Christian people, a man and his wife. But the man and his wife had been arrested for being Christians. And this slave, for the sport of the Roman world, they put the wife of the owner in the arena, tied her hands to a stake, and all the Roman people were surrounding her and were going to watch this slave, Demetrius, protect her from this wild bull. And so the wild bull was released from his pen, and here was this woman that was completely innocent, but completely, what's the word I'm looking for? Helpless. She was helpless. And so here came the bull. Demetrius was standing there in front of her. It was his job, if he could, to stop that bull from goring his owner. Well, the bull came, and this is the only scene I remember in the movie. He caught that bull by both horns, and then here was this huge, and you could just see the muscles rippling, and he turned that, and it just said, and it broke the bull's neck, and the bull lay there dead. You might think, well, with that kind of strength, when he went over to release her from the post, you might just think he could just grab her off there and break her in two, too. But he didn't. Of course, he wouldn't. He just gently untied the cord and then picked her up in his arms and walked out of that arena to the amazement of the people. Now, that's power under control, double strength. It's not only power, but it was the power that caused him also to restrain himself, to restrain the power. Well, that's one of the aspects of meekness. It's power under control. But a second one is foregoing my rights to fill somebody else's need. Foregoing my rights to fill somebody else's need. Now, you know, we're big on our rights, and we'll sue to get our rights, and we'll sit to get our rights. And we'll do about everything we can to get our rights. Well, a Christian has one more right than everybody else on earth. We've got the right to forego our rights. Let me give you an illustration of it that I'll always remember. Never will be able to forget it. We had just come back from New Zealand in 1970. Whew, that's 44 years ago. We just come back. We had our five children. We moved to Memphis, Tennessee. We were living on Mickey Drive. And we hadn't been back very long, but I had already shared with my boys the joy that I had in building model airplanes. But I'd never had a model airplane with a gasoline engine on it. Well, by the time we got back to the States, that's what the boys wanted. They wanted a model airplane with a gasoline engine on it. So they worked hard. They put all these pieces of balsa wood together, and they sanded them, and they got them all just right, and then they covered them with paper, and we would steam it then to make it tight, and then we'd put dope or lacquer on it, and then the decals and all that went with it. And they were working, and they just worked so hard, and they worked for weeks, and it was beautiful. And so one Sunday afternoon after church, they were there, and we were going to be a maiden flight. Hadn't flown it before. This was it. Gorgeous day like today. They went there and put the motor on the frame, bolted it down, and Tim said, "Let's see if it'll run." And so he put a little gasoline in it, and he flipped it and said, and boy, they got so excited they were just about beside themselves. And so real quick they said, "Let's go!" And so everybody stood back, and I was sitting there in this bay window watching the whole scene, enjoying it. They filled up the little gasoline container, and Tim said, "Okay, stand back." And so he flipped the thing and gave it a little shove, and so it went right straight up virtually just until it ran out of gas. And then it did like that, and then it headed nose first right down back to the earth, and when it hit, it broke both of the wings, but it could have been repaired. The one contingent that they hadn't planned on was our little 8-year-old daughter had a visiting guest in our home, and she was trying to learn how to ride a bicycle. And where on God's earth would she be riding the bicycle except right there on Mickey Drive, and ran right over the thing and just reduced it to matchsticks. And the boys, I had never seen them act like orangutans, but they were just jumping. And Tim, the oldest monkey, said, he just went berserk. He had just become a Christian in New Zealand, and he was 15 years old. He shouldn't. Well, he was a kid. He was a teenager, 15 years old teenager. And he said, "You didn't have any right to run over our airplane." He just bellowed at her. Well, it so startled her. It just jarred her. Boy, she put the bicycle down, and I saw it. And I just watched the whole thing. I was just going to let it work itself out. She came in the house, went down the hall, packed her little bag. She was there for the weekend. She intended to be, but there she went down the hall, packed her little bag, came back up the hall crying. Well, I didn't interfere. I just let it. She went out, opened the door, and went outside and started walking off down toward the corner. She didn't know where she lived. She just knew she didn't belong there. And I saw Tim and the boys look at their rights. They'd just been run over. And then I saw Tim look up and see her need. And then I saw him look back at his rights. She didn't have any right to run over that plane. But then I saw him look up and look and see her need. She was going down the road crying. And I thought, well, I wonder what will happen. This boy's become a Christian. Will he have the maturity enough? Let's see what he does with it. And I heard him say, "Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute." And he took off running after her. And by the time he got down to the end of the block, I couldn't hear what he said. But I saw this thing on the end of his arm flapping and patting her on the shoulder. And you know, that says an awful lot. I thought he was saying, "Oh, it's all right. Come on back. It's just an airplane. You're more important than an airplane. Come on back." And I saw in that very moment, I think it was the clearest example that I've ever seen. At least it was the first clearest example. And for me, I may be the only one I've ever seen so clear of someone who had meekness that overwhelmed him to the point that he was willing to forego his rights to fill somebody else's need. Well, whenever he said whatever he did and patted her, I saw her, you know, wipe her nose on her sleeve, wipe her eyes, and picked up her bag, and she was on the way back home. Everything was fine. Because that's what meekness does. Meekness is the door into your heart. Meekness is the door into the heart of the human being. And it was in her heart. It worked his way into her heart, and she was okay after he came back. Meekness is foregoing your rights to fill somebody else's need. But there's a third quality of meekness, or that illustrates it. And it's the willingness to serve rather than be served. And I saw this illustrated also. I was standing in Walmart one day in the line there at the customer service. And there was a lady there in front of me, and then there was a lady in front of her who had brought back a dress to this service counter. And I was standing there waiting, and I heard the service attendant say, you're wanting to bring this back, this dress back? And she said, yes, but she was a bit nervous. And she said, all right, and she was getting ready to give her the money. And the lady said, well, actually, I didn't buy it. A friend of mine bought it. Oh, and she said, well, that's all right. We'll buy it back. But it didn't relieve her anxiety. She was still uneasy. She said, well, actually, she didn't buy it at Walmart. And the lady said, oh, that's all right. We'll buy it back from you. I thought, my goodness alive, not buy it at Walmart and they're going to buy it back from her? No wonder they own half the earth. Sure enough, blessed are the meek for what? For they'll inherit the earth. Well, they haven't quite got all of it, but they're well on their way. And I'm convinced that that is the key. They have revolutionized retailing in the world. I'm serious. What they did when they adopted the slogan, what? The customer is always right. The customer isn't always right, but in Walmart's mind, they are. Now, they're not meek when it comes to their competitors. You can count on that. But they know where their bread's buttered, and they're meek to where they can do what they need to do to the people that pay their bills, that buy their products. I was once, and again, I go other places besides Walmart, but before we had a super center there in Searcy, they had to open up every morning about 8. And I was there one day, and I got there about 10 minutes till 8, and I could see through the glass doors, and they were having a staff meeting. And I looked through there, and they were having this pep rally. They go through this pep rally, and always they had a casket in there. They had 6 pallbearers carrying that casket, and here they were. And you know what was written on the side of the casket? Kmart. They were burying Kmart. So don't think that, you know, it's not all good news with Walmart, but when it comes to customers, by the way, I'll buy it back even though you didn't buy it from me. We'll buy it. It's willingness to serve rather than be served. And I think it's taking over. I think it's that attitude. You say you'll inherit the earth? Absolutely right. But how can doing that, it's just that meekness is the door into your heart. Every one of us in here, it's the door into our heart. And as surely as we as Christians become people who are meek people, people who are willing to serve rather than be served, people who are willing to forego our rights to fill somebody else's need, people who are willing to hold on to our power but to restrain it so we can make it for the good of other people, you just can't beat that. But there's a fourth part of this puzzle of who meekness is. It's laying down our lives for other people, laying down our lives for others. Since the fall of Baghdad, over 600 Americans have died. And this is a volunteer army. And I know that not all those who ended up in Iraq knew they were going to go to Iraq when they volunteered for the army. I know that. But these men and women are there in harm's way, protecting your freedom and my freedom and trying to provide freedom for the Iraqi people who have never known it. And I'm not trying to justify the war or anything about it, but I just know that they're there trying to preserve peace and trying to promote peace throughout the earth And there are people in this very audience today who have loved ones there. Penny has her husband there, and he's in a dangerous position. And all these people who are there trying to keep things or bring order to that world. There was one man, and he stands out because of some peculiar circumstances. His name is Pat Tillman, and you've seen him on the news. You've seen stories about him. He's all on the internet because of people's respect for him. Fox News reports on April 24th, Pat Tillman, a former pro football player who left the gridiron to become an Army Ranger, died during a combat operation in Afghanistan, military officials said Friday. The 27-year-old decided to stop playing for the Arizona Cardinals and join the armed forces after the September 11, 2001 attacks on the U.S. He passed up a $3.6 million contract with the NFL team to be a Ranger. Someone after the first service said, well, there's more to it than that. When he enlisted, and he could have because he had a degree, he had many things going for him that were required for leadership. He could have gone in as an officer. Pat Tillman went in as a private. And in addition to that, he gave up a salary with the NFL team of $3.6 million because he was convinced after the attack on September the 11th, 2001, that he wanted to go over there and do what he could to protect our country. Meekness is laying down our lives for other people. Now, finally, I want to document this as we close. And I want to ask that we read it, not together, but I'm going to ask that we dim the lights and I'm going to step down out of the way. And I want to ask that you think about these confirmations. This week, as I was preparing this, I was overwhelmed with a sense of my faith being reaffirmed, so much so that you'll see all of this come together and you'll know that we're on the right track. We're on the right track. We're on our way home. Hold the course. Keep the faith. And keep your eye on this one who is meekness. I'm going to ask that we view now from Isaiah 53. That was read at the first service at the Lord's table. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed. Then Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to be baptized by John. But John tried to deter him, saying, I need to be baptized by you. Do you come to me? Jesus replied, let it be so now. It's proper for us to do this to fulfill all righteousness. For who is the greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table? But I'm among you as one who serves. By myself I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just. For I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them and prayed, Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. Put your sword back in its place, Jesus said to Peter. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I don't know what these documentations do for your faith, but when I see this one whom you and I serve as Lord become so totally at one with his own teachings, when we see him becoming what he taught you and me to be, the picture is complete. Jesus himself is the embodiment of meekness. Kids, Jesus is the embodiment of that thing that you and I find so difficult to incorporate into our lives. And the question is simply this: do you want to live this kind of life? You have to make that decision. As you deal with your wife and your husband, you've got to decide whether you want to live that kind of life or not. Jesus did in front of us, and he calls us to do it. As you deal with your parents, you're going to have to decide whether you want your rights or whether you'll forego your rights to fill their need. Parents, you'll have to decide whether you want to forego your rights to fill others' needs. All of us have to decide whether we're going to live a life of meekness, whether we're going to allow ourselves to be open to be people whose lives are laid down for other people. This, to me, this past week, I think there are times in our lives when different circumstances happen to us, and all of a sudden we're riveted to the truthfulness of Jesus and what he is and what he calls us to be. There are points in my life when I can pinpoint, this one this week was one for me. When I saw him as he taught us to be, and then when I saw him as he was and as he is, I thought, you know, nobody on earth, no human being could have planned all this. This is from God. And I'm buying into it. And it's not too late for you to buy into it. Most of us here today probably are Christians. And it's the majority, or the most of the message will impact the most of us here who have already signed on. But I'm not sure that we understood maybe the terms. This is one of the terms. This is one of the things he's calling us to. Poverty of spirit, mourning over our wrongs, but meekness as we surrender ourselves to God. This will make an impact on this church. If you, as members of this church, will commit yourself, if we'll commit ourselves to being meek people, to where we treat one another with this kind of respect, and we're willing to lay down our rights in order to fill somebody else's need, it will impact this church. The life of this church will be impacted. It will impact the lives of those around this church, because they're going to see a people willing to lay their lives down for other people, that they're not selfish people. They've decided they're going to follow this one who was the embodiment of weakness. But there are those of you, perhaps, who are not Christians. You've not signed on yet. You've not confessed your faith in Jesus. You may already believe in him. You may have, repented of your sins. You may have come to mourning over your sins, acknowledging them and mourning over them. But it may just be that you've never yet been immersed into Christ in something that he says that he himself did when he surrendered his majesty and let John, his cousin, immerse him. And now he calls you and me to demonstrate our faith in him by imitating his meekness. And that's done, I think, no more clearly in any place other than in the action of baptism, where you allow someone else to simply let you say, I'm through. It's no longer about me. It's no longer I who live. I want to live for Him, and I want to live in Him. The water's prepared this morning. It may be that right now, at this very moment, you're standing at a position where perhaps for the first time in your life you understand what Christianity means, what being a follower of Jesus Christ means. You may have heard invitations by the hundreds, but it might not ever have occurred to you at the time, He's calling me to lay my life down for other people. That's really the basis of what Christianity is. That's what discipleship is. I wonder if you're here this morning and you'd like to make that start. Realize this is what it costs. And if you're willing to do that, if you want to live that kind of life, now's your opportunity. Think about it.